From the mayor's office, I'm Rick Moore with Gloucester Mayor Sefathia Romeo Taken, and we're going to get right to it. Madam Mayor, Saturday night I was over on the boulevard for the Gloucester Fisherman Memorial Remembrance Service, and just to say, it was incredible. And I think the thing that stands out most to me was how many red eyes there were and teary eyes, and I'm not sure people outside of the town get that, but your 2.5 2-minute speech was amazing.
Well, thank you. It wasn't about me, so I didn't want to go into a long speech. People said, what are you going to talk about? I'm going to talk from the heart, and everyone knows I do that. Grew up with the fisherman families. My grandfather was a fisherman. My uncle was a fisherman. My husband was a fisherman and was on a boat that sank twice. Lucky to be alive at that time. But I remember getting the calls from friends when they kept in Cosmo. And my girlfriend down the street, who I knew her father, Jerry, for all my life, actually was retired from fishermen and had a coffee shop and just was going to make a little bit more extra money just to go to Las Vegas and have a good time for his anniversary and not knowing. And, you know, his daughter passed away not knowing where her father was. That's the most horrific feeling. I remember being involved with the Italian Gold. There was a relative on that boat and not knowing, but we were very fortunate at the time to have Senator Kennedy be able to get funding to go down with the submarine and at least find something to put a closure. And the same thing with, it was hard, the most recent with Heavy D, but also with Matty Russo and his father-in-law, John Orlando, which is like a brother to me. We called him Batista. I grew up all my life with him. And to have, you know, father-in-law and son-in-law and to watch their family lose two main men in their lives was the most horrific thing and not have answers at all. And that's, when you understand that it's Mother Nature comes in and it just happens and you know there was a storm. But when you know there's calm weather and then you get a call like that, and then the most distressful call when she says it was the fire alarm going off on the boat and she thought it was down the wharf, so then the Coast Guard and everyone else, and find out it wasn't. We were fortunate enough for them that they found the bodies right away and they got to put that to rest. But in their mind, the unknown, the pain in your heart never goes away and the tears never dry.
And you know, you talk about the Gloucester Island mentality, but you look at those names on the cenotaphs out there, and you got to think that probably everybody who's lived in Gloucester for any period of time, if you don't have a family relative who's been lost at sea, you certainly know someone.
Absolutely. When we were doing the Fisherman's Wives unveiling of the statue, we got a call about the Russian boat, Canadian, hitting some Gloucester residents, and we had one survivor. Can you imagine what he has to live with every day? We got that call. We had a march as the Fishermen's Wives. We knew them. They were dear to our heart. We had a march. And Senator Kerry was with us, and we told him, and we're marching, and we're putting down the wreaths at the statue, and then we're going to the Fishermen's Wives statue. That was the most difficult day of my life, being Vice President of Fishermen's Wives, City Council, to walk, knowing that I just want to scream. Knowing that I want to cry because I knew the gentlemen that were on there. I grew up with Tommy Frontiero, James Sanfilippo, and yet I had to be strong because we didn't want some of the family members who were not notified yet to get notified. And as we were walking, it was the most difficult time because I knew that the people that were there, there was a parade, there was over 2,000 people for that unveiling, and when we announced it, even for the people who were not Gloucester residents cried when they heard the Coast Guard speak about that. And I think it was reality for people who were not in Gloucester of what really fishing is. And that you think with technology and all the stuff and the Coast Guard and helicopters you see on TV, all the life saving, that no one's going to die. But yet we just lost someone, a couple, you know, Heavy D. I mean, really, the ocean can make you smile and the ocean can make you cry.
I remember that ceremony. I remember seeing Senator Kennedy on video. I remember Mayor Toby at the time, a very eloquent speech. But Linda Greenlaw said she told me, I was so lucky to meet Linda Greenlaw on Saturday, and she told me about technology and that it's the westernmost boat when you're out there that tells you where the weather's coming from because that's closest to shore, and that was Billy Tyne's boat. But she also said, Madam Mayor, that some ports that she's been in, and she's been up and down the coast, don't have very many friendly people on their docks. And she said she is still, to this day, loving Gloucester so much because of that closeness and the fact that people are very helpful, and that she said, you know, you pull up to the dock, there's somebody there willing to take your line and help out, and it's just amazing, willing to share. And the other thing she spoke about was the optimism of fishermen.
Absolutely. You know what, and I wish I could have stayed for that whole thing, but I had to go to a different event, and I know what she was talking about, because as a fisherman's wife, we'd laugh. We would be all the wives. We'd go down to the end of the fort, wave goodbye, and when they come in, we'd all come in and wave, yeah. And we knew if the fish was full of, the boat was full of fish, it would be
backside, down the water
right.
Line. Yeah, yeah.
When we knew it was up, we're going like, we're not going to say a word, put the kids in the car, you know, we joke around among each other, and then we'd call each other, knowing it's going to be a broker, they called it,
yep.
But yet the wives knew what to do, we knew how to gather together and stuff, but what we loved is that the fishermen that worked on the wharfs loved tourists, loved people coming in. They would help you with the line. They had to, because back then you were tied to seven boats.
Right.
You had to jump over seven boats to get to your own boat at times. And during the storms, you'd all time out together. I would get calls, and back then there wasn't the technology you have today. When my husband was out fishing and I was a young bride, I'd get merchant marine operator. This is the merchant marine operator calling, and everyone could hear what you had to say, so it was very limited what you could say. But I would say, you know, the captain's calling. He wants the wives to know that they are out there. They're tied up with this boat, this boat, this boat. So you notify one call. You get one call, and they would notify all of them saying that, you know, like the Giacomo F, the Little Flower, the Vito C, you know, the Joseph and Lucia are all tied up. So that what they do is out there during the storm, they would tie to each other. So it'd be like a barge mm-hmm. instead of one boat,
mm-hmm.
and they would weigh it out. And then they'd call us back, we're all okay, the storm's gone. And you know what, during the summer, the wives, I think we were the happiest, because we weren't too afraid about storms. Like June to like September, when there was not hurricane and no, yeah. We were kind of calm. Soon as September came, it wasn't because school started. We were excited school started, but we in our hearts knew that's when you got the, you know, the Gulf of Maine, you got all that, you got the storms coming in, you know, hurricanes, everything else. And then in the winter, where you would say, we're right here off a 10-pound island, but we can't come in. If we take one more, we're going to sink, because the boat was so heavy with ice, they had to break it with the mallets. And they couldn't break it enough, because every spray would go right on. And I'm going like, are you serious? You can swim to shore. What do you mean you can't come in? And you, when you saw the videos, and back then it was the Betamax videos. I can't even show people now. But you see the videos, and you would see their faces frozen and their beards with icicle and their hands stuck like you had arthritis, because if you would move them, you would get, you know, you could break a finger off. I'm going, oh, my God, why do you go fishing? And I'll tell you something. When the doctors and everyone told my husband that he would never fish again, that's when his life ended. He got depressed, and yes, he took his life, but it ended when they told him he couldn't fish anymore. You cannot take the true fisherman out of the sea. We tried putting them in. We tried doing with the fishermen's wives and mass labor. We try to retrain them. Some you can. The fishermen cannot be taken out of the sea. They will die with the sea.
And that's something I don't understand. I was a lobsterman with my dad, but we only fished in and around the harbor. We didn't go out in foul weather. And you see, as you just said, people went out for weeks at a time in the worst weather. And yet I talked to so many fishermen over the years who just love it. And I don't get it. I don't understand it, but they love it.
My husband learned how to read and write English. He went to school. He did everything else. You know, I could have got him a job at Gorton's, you know, anywhere. He could have went everywhere.
Sure.
And he even tried painting. For 1 year, he did carpentry work. He was a great carpenter. I mean, I didn't even know the skills my husband had.
Mm-hmm.
I asked some of the wives, did you know your husband can do this and this and this? Well, first of all, they go out for 10 days. They'd come home for 3 days, and when they come home, the first day they're taking out fish. Then you go say hello to the in-laws. You're exhausted. The second day, you're going to get ready to go back out. So you're mending the nets. You're working on the boat. You're getting it ready. The third day, you get the ice. You're out. So my husband never showed me the talents that he could at home. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he knew electricity. I didn't know he knew carpentry and stuff. One time, he was on a vessel that sank, and I said, enough. You're not going back out. I can't. You're not. This is the second time. There's not going to be a third. That's it. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And we argued, and okay. And I think he got scared too. So he stayed home. But that didn't last. That lasted one summer. He was going crazy. He was great at carpentry. He was great at electricity. He was great at painting. He was painting with my brother-in-law. Got beautiful houses over on Nugent's and some by Rocky Neck that he painted. And it was just amazing the work that he knew, the talents he had that I didn't even know. My house never looked better. But he was lost. He would go, we'd take rides, and our rides would be down the waterfront again. Mm. And he'd say, oh, that boat's having trouble. You can tell the way it's sterning in. Oh, that boat's got fish. Oh, look, that boat's got fish. Yay, it's about time. I'm going, all it was is fish. Finally, he ended up going back fishing. And I just couldn't, and he could have had any job. You know, he could have done so many things, but you just couldn't. And I asked him, when you were little, didn't you have a dream that you wanted to be something? And he says, I was born in Italy, in Sicily. My father owned a boat, and you had no dreams. You were just to help out the family. If you were a farmer, you worked the farms. If you were a fisherman, you were a fisherman. Mm-hmm. You didn't have a chance to dream. You'd go to school if you were lucky, and then you'd go fishing.
And there are those that's the dream for them, is they want to do that. And no place is it more evident than in Gloucester. You know, I got to tell you, my wife told me I had to stop flying lessons. And I stopped flying lessons.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, and someone said, and when you love it and you love the ocean and you're outside, you can't be confined. I mean, I have the most respect for Russell Sherman. He's a Harvard graduate, They think that, you know, fishermen don't have degrees. They do. Mm. But he chose that life. He outside. You know what? Like I said, in the summer, I had no sympathy because I had all the beauty around them. I mean, they talked to it's so funny. When we owned our own vessel, you would hear them on the CB. They would talk to the whales. They would make the noise. Oh. And I'd hear them answer them back and the music and stuff. Being out there, it's a whole new world. It's a whole new world. And funny is, can I tell you something?
Sure.
I thought my husband was allergic to me because he was out in the ocean so much that we finally bought a house and we lived in the woods and he was swollen and he was sneezing. And time he come home, he's sick. And so he said, I don't have these problems when I'm fishing. And I went, you're allergic to me then. And actually, he was allergic to all the trees that we had in the back of our house. But I mean, it's just so amazing is that they don't have allergies out there. They don't have their pains. They work. And when they come home, you see them getting older and you see them hunched back a little, or you see their hands full of calluses, and yet, but you see them the happiest people on earth. It's their love.
And I do have a classmate of mine, went to Lowell Tech, and he got a nuclear physics engineering degree, and he was a lobsterman his whole life.
Yeah.
You know, he loved it. Let's shift gears, Safathia, because this is so, it's very emotional, and thank you for sharing that. Those are fantastic stories. And it's so typically Gloucester. But I do want to mention a couple of other things, if we may. And one is you've got a brand new school opening up in the western part of the city. And there was an open house. And maybe just a little update on how things are going with the West Parish School.
Well, it's going. It's the children that got to see it. It's all over Facebook, all over social media. The happiest one little girl, they told her mom, no more tiles falling on your daughter's head. And that was a friend of mine. She was actually in a classroom when one of the tiles fell on her head. And she goes, well, you know, when they say, you know, the sky is falling, well, there's no more sky falling there. It's a beautiful school. The architect and the design is Gloucester. Some of the lighting is Gloucester with the, you know, the nets. It looks like a fishing net around some of the bulbs. It's absolutely beautiful. We need to know, in all honesty, people, we need to maintain it. I mean, it's great building something new, but if you don't take care of it, it's going to get old. So that's my main concern, is make sure that building stays maintained. Because, you know what, you look at a lot of the new buildings, they could be even better if we maintain them. And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm saying that we all need to help out, too. And it's not just the city or school side. It's the people, too. Respect what you have. You know, make sure it happens that way. You see something, pick it up. If something's, you know, we all need to participate in some of the buildings that we have. have. We have to cherish them. And if we don't, then we're going to lose them. And that's a wonderful school. And like I said, whether you have an old school or a new school, it's the teachers. And the teachers we have in Gloucester are amazing. The children will learn as long as you're willing to teach. And they have to be also taught at home. We have to participate.
Okay. And finally, opioids... The opioid situation, of course, Gloucester is a focal point with the Angel program and so on, but there's a vigil coming up, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
The vigil is tonight, which I'll be attending, and it'll be down the boulevard. A lot of people do start to show up. There are family members of people who have passed by overdose, and you feel their pain, and that you give them comfort because you're saying it's okay. See, you know what? Until the Angel program came forward, to believe it or not, and then this governor finally said the word that we have an epidemic, everyone was blaming, you know, the parents or someone. If you had a child, and I do, I have a child who's a recovering addict. If you have a child, every parent looks through their life, what if, could have, should have. Could I have done that better? Can I change that better? It's normal for a parent to blame themselves. This is the first time ever. And I'm going to tell you, no one knows. If you remember, I think it was 2 years ago when the governor came and they caught me whispering in his ear, or actually, it looks like I was kissing his ear or something because he's so tall. We were joking around with the past governor wanted endorsement, and I was saying, well, until we get a governor who has a pair of then I'm not giving endorsement because you need to come get around the fishermen. Mm-hmm. Governor Baker, when he bent down to talk to me, I went, thank you for having a pair of, mm-hmm. because not only have you addressed the waterfront, you've addressed the opiate issues, you addressed the heroin drug abuse and calling it an epidemic. It made all us parents who either lost a child or have a child who's recovering or have a child who's still doing it feel that, you know what? It's not us. It's not our fault. Parents, family members were so embarrassed because we were being judged by other people. Well, you didn't parent right, or you didn't do something right, or that. But it's an epidemic. It now doesn't have a color or a creed or a nationality or an income level. It's explosive. It's the worst I've ever seen it, and I've been in healthcare for 18 years. The worst. It starts from 12-year-olds all the way up to 70-year-olds, seniors. It's like, and you wouldn't believe what's out there. And when you can make something, go on a computer, make a drug up, it's like, what's going on? And yet for him to say it's an epidemic, and now it's going around nationally in the whole United States, and actually globally, saying it's an epidemic. But for us to embrace it, now we need to go a little forward. The Angel program, we move forward in that to bring recognition. I like the other mayors and myself to find out what do we do when the addicts come back and how do we address that. And I also would like to help the doctors because we are now educating doctors not to give these pills out. We now have to educate the doctors and train doctors to look at a patient that's recovering, and when they say they don't feel good, to actually address the issues and not think they're using again. So when you have a heart problem, do you go to a foot doctor? So if you're having a problem, and unless your expertise is in drug abuse, you're not going to know. They are the best con artist. They are the best of everything. You can't blame doctors for not treating someone because the fact is they're so good at when they were before when they wanted their medication. So, and the same thing is when you have a recovering addict or you have an addict who wants to be recovered and they go to detox or they go to these places, the insurance companies don't pay the hospitals or the facilities or the doctors what they should be paid. Like if it was a heart or cancer. Right. Yet you need trained people. You need trained nurses. You need trained physicians. Yet when you're in a hospital and you're ill, you still need 24-hour service there. You still need the bed. You still need the nurses. Yet you're not getting paid for it. What are we saying on a life? Because you're a drug user, you're not worth anything? Well, we did that years ago when my husband took his life. I swore that I was going to do something about it. And I fought and fought and fought with everyone in Massachusetts to make sure that they realized that depression is a disease you can't see, because you can't see doesn't mean it's not there. You can't take an x-ray. You can't do anything in the brain. So we need to do more than 20 visits. You needed to, some of them started off with 10 visits with the insurance, then 20, you need a prior authorization. And then by the time you got that prior authorization, it's like you're back to square one. We fought and fought in Massachusetts where it's considered a disease and it's considered now like a regular physical health part of it. It's not mental. It's under, not under the mental that you can go unlimited visits to the therapist, which you need. So we need to do that now with addiction, saying we need to be able to train physicians. We need to be able to do that. Why is it that we allowed some physicians to be Suboxone doctors? They go to a minimum training, and what they get paid privately, and that's why a lot of them are doing it, is astronomical. And yet, why would I want to be a recovering physician when I can make more money the other way? That's sad.
Okay.
So, that's sad.
So the next step then?
The next step.
Okay. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
Gloucester Mayor Safathia Romeo Taken. I'm exhausted. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.